Hello and welcome to another edition of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast. This is your host, John Jantz, and my guest today is Josh Kaufman. He is an independent business professor, education activist, and author of The Personal MBA, Master the Art of Business Without Spending a Whole Bunch of Money. Now, I actually added that last part, but Josh, thanks for joining me.
So. I like it. It's good. Thanks, John.
So you actually have been, this book's been out for a few months here now when we've recorded, but you've actually built this book on kind of a self-education program that you've been teaching, or you know, some might say preaching, for about 6 or 7 years, right? Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. It actually just started as a very personal project. I wanted to learn more about business, and I looked at all of the traditional graduate MBA programs out there. And I decided that they were very expensive and took a lot of time, and it wasn't a good option for me. So I basically just decided to do it myself and trucked myself down to the library in the local Barnes & Noble and just started reading. And 6 years later, the personal MBA was published.
So what is your sort of traditional educational background then?
You know, I went to the University of Cincinnati. My undergrad is in a technical field, business information systems. Mm-hmm. Started as a computer engineer. Mm. And it was funny, through a series of very fortunate events, I found myself with an internship at one of the largest companies in the world, Procter & Gamble, doing some of their very early internet relationship marketing campaigns. So I worked on a website called homemadesimple.com. Which was, you know, P&G selling wonderful things like Dawn dishwashing detergent on the internet. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I started in a very technical field, but in a few short years, I found myself working in brand management at the company that invented the term, which was just mind-bending for me. And as a result, when I graduated, I had a job offer to be an assistant brand manager. And all of my peers were going to be have MBAs from top 15 business schools, and it was just intimidating.
Right.
Because you know, at that point, I thought that they knew something or had this knowledge or set of skills that I didn't. But it didn't make sense for me to quit my job and go back to school to then come back to a job I already had. It just didn't make sense. So I decided to do it myself, and I started reading business books. My senior year of college, and I haven't stopped since.
Well, now you've probably got a little bit of your finger on the pulse of, you know, what's going on in the academic world. I know in the I don't know, the 90s, maybe the early 21st century, you know, it was you got the degree and then you went on and found maybe you went out and worked a couple of years and then you got an MBA, and that was sort of the track. I mean, is that track changing for you know, the kids that are getting out of school now? I call them kids because I can. I had one of them call me grandpa the other day, though, so, you know.
Oh, that's harsh. That's harsh.
I don't think he meant it as a term of endearment either. So.
Oh.
But so you are seeing that's not, I mean, that people are, there's much more of a, you know, a vibe about, hey, jump in and do your own thing.
Yeah, and I think it's actually coming both from people who kind of want to avoid the working for a company route to begin with,
right.
But it's also coming from people who do go the traditional route and then, you know, find themselves in a very nicely paying, prestigious position at Goldman Sachs and realizing that they hate their life.
Yeah.
And they want to go off and do something on their own. So there's a... People don't necessarily come out of credentialing programs with the understanding that they're going to be working for the same company for the next 50 years of their life. There's a realization that at some point they're going to do their own thing, or they're going to want to do their own thing. And there's a certain set of things that they need to know in order to do that well, which unfortunately business schools don't teach very well, even if you go. And so, yeah, I think more people are realizing that knowing how to start and run a business well, whether it's a small one or a big one, it's a very, very important skill. And there's really only a core set of things that you need to know, at least to start, to do it well.
Well, you know, one of the things that I actually encounter, and maybe it's just the circles I run in, that, you know, a lot of folks are starting businesses without really any background without any MBA, you know, certainly training. More likely, they went to work for an accounting firm and thought, you know, this isn't that hard to do. I think I'll start my own accounting firm.
Right.
And so they knew how to balance a balance sheet, but that was about it.
Yeah. Or engineers or programmers who create something valuable and realize that there's a market for it, and they start selling it, and all of a sudden they have a company. It's like, whoa, I don't know how to do this. So yeah, there's a lot of experimentation that's happening, which is really awesome.
Well, I was going to say one of the things I really like about your book is that, you know, there are books on, you know, I've contributed a couple books, say, on marketing. You know, there are books on finance. There are books on, you know, probably. Well, I know for a fact you've taken ideas from all of these many various disciplines, right, and put them kind of into a book that I see as a really great place for somebody. And I'm not sure if it's the place to start. Sometimes you have to go out there and hit your head against the wall before this kind of stuff makes sense. But it's a great way for somebody to see how the sum of all these parts moving together. And I think that's sometimes missing in, you know, a marketing book that doesn't maybe take enough, doesn't give sales, say, enough, you know, credit for the role that those two things play together. And I think that's the part that for a lot of business owners, once they start kind of viewing their entire business as this sum of moving systems, you know, I think the world starts to make more sense.
Yeah, and it helps to have an appreciation for the whole of the system that you're going to be dealing with.
Right.
And, you know, you're totally right that people sometimes need to whack their head against the wall a couple times before they realize certain things are important. But there's also, you've heard the saying that the map is not the territory.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, business books aren't the territory of actually running the business.
Right.
But the maps are very useful. But a lot of the books that are out there will take, you know, one very specific part of business. You know, let's say doing discounted cash flow analysis or doing a pro forma financial analysis, something like that. They'll go really, really deep. And it's kind of like having a map that has a lot of detail on one particular mountain, but then ignoring all of the surrounding area.
Right.
And so, you know, what I really tried to do is, okay, welcome to business. What exactly are we doing here? What's the point? How do all the things fit together? And give people at least enough of a starting point to feel like they know enough about what they're doing that it's not intimidating.
Well, and we talked a little bit off the air before we started here. I'm a big fan of Peter Drucker, and it's clear that you are as well. And in fact, I tell people all the time, one of my favorite marketing books is The Practice of Management.
Totally.
By Drucker, which, you know, certainly a lot of people wouldn't think of that book first. But, you know, I think that he probably more than anybody before him and maybe anybody since, you know, really focused on this idea of value creation.
Yep.
And I really do love how, if I can find the page that you... I've been flipping around so much I can't find it again, but where you talk about the five parts of every business.
Right.
And I think that if we could get more small business owners to read that and understand that concept, I think that business itself would make a lot more sense.
This halftime break is brought to you by Constant Contact. Constant Contact helps small businesses and nonprofits build great customer relationships with email marketing, event marketing, and online surveys. Visit them today at constantcontact.com and sign up for your free 60-day trial.
Yeah, and it's really valuable to have at least a place to start. So if you're totally confused, it's like, what can you start with? And at least understand that gives you a launching point.
Well, what I always tell people is if you have that kind of strategy idea in mind, then it becomes the filter for, I mean, the ludicrous stuff like, should we be on Facebook? you know,
totally.
I mean, it just, you can go back to that strategy and go, I don't know, would that create value? Would that allow us to deliver value? And I think that people need that to make some of the tactical decisions that they really have no data, you know, to make a good decision about.
Or even just getting started, so many people get bogged down in the, okay, I need to create a business plan. And they're thinking, you know, big 50-page glossy document that's immaculate that will make sure the business succeeds at the very first time.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that. You just start with the structure, fill it in, and then run a bunch of experiments to see what
Nobody's
works.
Nobody's ever nailed a business plan. I can't imagine.
It's never happened.
In fact, the listeners of this show have heard me say this a couple times before, but you know, I think a lot of the business plan people, a lot of times people accuse entrepreneurs of the, you know, ready, fire, aim, but a lot of the business plan people are ready, aim, you know, and it's like, okay, you know, so at some point you've got to ship something.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's a lot of the, a lot of value in the ready, fire, aim approach, as long as the firing does not result in the explosion that kills you, right? So the keeping your experiment small and self-contained, that's a really big part of what
And the cool thing, though, is I think one of the things that the social web does for us is allows us to do that experimentation with in very personal, very small groups of, you know, of our customers. So, you know, you know, it's not like you're creating an assembly line and you, if you're wrong on one part, it's going to cost, you know, $500 million.
Yeah, totally. Brilliant example of this I saw the other day. There was a designer who had an idea for an application, but he wasn't a programmer. He didn't know how to do it. I think the application was called Quicksend. It was an email application. Had no idea how to make this happen, but he basically created a landing page. And he said, this is exactly, you know, what the software does. This is what it would look like. This is how it would work. Looked exactly like a sales page. And at the bottom it said, I think this is a good idea. Based on the attention that it's getting, I think it looks like there are customers. If you're a developer, let me know. And this got on the front page of Hacker News, and all sorts of people were saying, yes, I would totally buy this if
that's
this was
fun.
Done. I mean, talk about saving potentially years worth of effort to figure out whether or not something works. It's great.
You, I think, kind of talk about the concepts that you teach in this book sort of holistically as business mental models. There are dozens, if not more, than that.
I think the final count was
220. and I wonder if maybe we can, you know, use up the time that we have left here today for this, just maybe kind of talking a little bit of, about a couple of those. I'll throw them out.
Sure.
We haven't rehearsed this, so you're going to have to hopefully you're living
totally
these,
fine.
Right? Four methods to increase revenue.
Oh, it's my favorite aside from the five parts of every business. So the general idea is, if you want to bring in more revenue for your business, there's only four ways to do it. Doesn't matter what the business is or what it does. There's only four ways to bring more money into your business. And the analogy that I like to use is a restaurant. So if you're running a restaurant, you want to bring in more money. Well, you can bring in more customers. That's one way to do it. Get more people in the door. You can encourage each of those customers to purchase more. So sell, which is usually called increase average transaction size. So get them to buy drinks and desserts and appetizers and all that stuff. You can encourage your customers to come in more often. So instead of coming in once a month, they come in once a week. Or you can raise your prices. And that's really it. It's a very simple checklist. If you can bring in more people, get them to buy more, get them to buy more often, or raise your prices, you will make more money. That's basically all your options. So whatever you're doing, use that as a checklist.
Yeah, and the real
very
fun
useful
thing is when you can do three of those at once, right?
Yeah, totally, or all four at the same time.
We already mentioned the word value, but I think it's you spend enough time on, and I frankly think it's not only important but is sort of misunderstood. You know, a lot of people think in terms of I can create a more valuable product or I can create a new service that's value. You spend a lot of time talking about a whole lot of other ways that you can create value, and I will throw in there that you know, I've seen people that will pay a whole lot of money for something that I thought was worthless.
Totally. Happens every day.
So, you know, what are some other ways that people can start thinking about this idea of value?
Yeah, well, value, you know, just to provide a very basic definition, is what other people want. And the why people want it has all, it can range anything from this provides something that I'm trying to achieve, so something very functional. I buy dishwashing liquid because I want to clean my dishes. It can range into aesthetics and social signaling. So I want something because it makes me look pretty or because it makes other people respect me more. So value is a very subjective thing. It changes from one person to other. And there are some common themes like that. But value is what other people want. And the big challenge, particularly when you're starting a business, is you may have an idea about what people want, but you never quite know until you actually offer them something. So there's an idea in the book called The Iron Law of the Market, which is basically Mark Andreessen, the founder of Netscape and a venture capitalist now, said it best. He said, markets that don't exist don't care how smart you are.
Yes.
And so a large part of particularly the early stage of entrepreneurship is testing to see if this thing that you think is valuable to other people actually is valuable to other people. And a lot of that is doing a lot of small experimentations with, you know, either the utilitarian part of things or the social signaling part of things to create some object or some service or some experience that actually is.
Well, and, you know, I often will tell people, you know, a lot of times when people are trying to start up, they look at it and they say, oh, you know, I don't. This is a really good idea because nobody else is doing it, you know. I don't want to do this idea because it seems like there's already three other people in my town doing it. And you know, a lot of times I'll tell people, hey, if people are already spending money on this and there's already an established market and established spend on this, you know, it's a lot of times it's a whole lot easier to do something better than everybody else is than it is to try to convince people that they might want to need what you do.
Totally. That's actually some of the best news that you can have. It's like all sorts of people are already doing this thing that makes money, and it's kind of crappy in ways that I know I can improve upon. That's gold.
Well, I think it's a lot easier to steal market from people than to teach people about this great new thing. So I'm a big fan. Yeah. You know, if you're going to say there's any thread that runs through my writing and my book is this idea of you know, marketing as a system, and I think that it's just one of the systems, and systems are run very well by checklists and processes, and I think that if you know, business owners particularly have 100 things that need to get done every day, this idea of documenting your standard operating procedures. And I even hate using some of those terminology because that people have been scared off by those. But yeah. Well, and I like,
boring.
I mean, when you show people, and I have, you know, folks that work with me that, you know, here's a checklist.
Yep.
You know, just and, yep. And in fact, I was reading have you seen that book? It's called The Checklist Manifesto.
Tool Gawande,
that, you know, they're actually using them in you know, operating rooms, you know, in surgical procedures with the idea of being that it just allows people to not have to think. It certainly improves accuracy, you know, but and I think that's a part that you spend quite a bit of time talking about as well.
Yeah, and it's so easy to skip the little steps that really matter. So, you know, for example, the example that Gawande uses in the Checklist Manifesto is when you're inserting an IV line into a patient, if you forget to use the antiseptic on the insertion site, you're going to have an infection. And, you know, when the patient is crashing and, you know, all sorts of things are going on in the environment, it's incredibly easy to forget that stuff, even though it's very important. And so when I'm working with clients, particularly clients of a more creative persuasion, they get concerned because it's like, oh, that's going to just sap all of the creativity from the business. And once they actually start experimenting with creating checklists and operating procedures, they come back and it's like, wow, I have a lot more time to actually be creative now. Because they're not spending all their time and energy doing things that they've already figured out how
absolutely.
To do.
Well, so there are 223 more of these, if people care to get the book, that we could talk about today. But we've run out of time. I've had a brilliant time talking with Josh Kaufman, Personal MBA. It is definitely a book that, you know, it sounds so cliche to say on people's must read, but if you're starting a business, I can't think of, or you are in a business and you're wondering why it's so hard, I can't think of a better sort of book that would cover all of your bases. Well,
thank you so much, John. I appreciate it.
Great visiting with you, and you listeners out there, as I am fond of saying to close the show, make good choices. So, Josh, thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much.